This is Jaguars Reporters.
Jaguars Reporters. Reporters.
Join Jaguars.com senior writer John Osher and peer of the realm we call Game Day, Cole Pepper, as they break down the last Jaguars game and look ahead to the next time the Jaguars take the field.
Touchdown Jacksonville!
Jaguars Reporters is brought to you by Baptist Health, Wells Fargo, Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue, and by Everbank. Jaguars Reporters begins right now.
And we welcome you in for our first installment of Jaguars Reporters following an actual game. Is that thing on?
Yes, it is. Yes,
good work by you. Always go, always count on the writer to do one of these.
Is this on? What?
Hello? Hello?
Please don't bang on the equipment.
Or the producer, for that matter.
Hey.
That is Joe Fortunato doing his best impression of his wife and bossing us around, along with... John Osher, the Jaguars.com senior
writer. There's only one.
She's the boss. You're right. No, she's the boss. And John Osher, the Jaguars.com senior writer. All right. Jaguars look pretty good.
Yeah.
Beating the Giants on Friday night.
Yeah. As we've discussed, I think you got everything out of that game you wanted to get if you were Mike Mularkey. You got a team that played well in spots, showed some things that it can be good at. At the same time, you had plenty to teach with this week, which is what you still want in a training camp. So, I don't really know what fans who were unhappy with that game expected the first time out of the box with a new staff, a new system, young players. I thought they showed a lot of direction, which is what you wanted to.
Yeah, I did too. And you start talking about the big issues that they faced over the offseason that they tried to address. Quarterback,
mm-hmm.
wide receiver, punting game, pass rush. Pass rush was maybe the one that didn't flash a lot.
Right.
But all the others certainly stood up and made some significant plays, and you could see progress in all of those areas. And as Jordan Palmer told me today in the locker room, preseason is about two things. It's about winning, and it's about improving.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jaguars were able to do both.
Well, and people tend to think of the NFL sometimes as a finished product, meaning, from one off season to the other, sometimes fans forget that players can improve from within. And they also lose sight. I don't know if it hasn't happened around here a lot, but, teams can improve and keep getting better from week one to week two mm-hmm. to week three. And, I believe from what I've seen of this coaching staff and the way these players respond to this coaching staff that this is going to be a team that improves. The improvement you saw in certain spots in week one of the preseason, I don't know that there's any reason to think that those spots aren't going to continue to improve.
And we'll talk about some of those areas
sure.
here more specifically. But, of course, in our first segment here of Jaguars Reporters, we like to get things fired up.
And now, three burning questions.
Joe Fortunato delivers the burning questions.
All right, question one, gang. Can the Jaguars win with Blaine Gabbert playing as well as he did on Friday?
Well, if he plays as well as he did the first series. And I think what you have to remember is he played a very small amount of time. So we saw a sliver of what he's capable of, a sliver of what the offense is capable of. But if you consider he played three series, I get the feeling they were going to do pretty good things in the second series had they not had the Sixers shorts fumble. So you figure, okay, they played well for a series and a half. Give them that they may have, got a couple first downs in the second series. If you have 10 to 12 series in a game and you get a touchdown and a field goal, on two of three of them, you're moving pretty well. So I think, again, we saw good things from Blaine, and I think they can win if he plays as well as they did on Friday.
Even not just taking that for – if he plays as well as he does in the first drive, not
sure.
only can they, but they're going to win a lot.
Right.
But taking into account everything else that happened, I think that you saw him – again, not a perfect day, but a very good day, and he certainly looked like a guy who was in more greater command of what was going on the field around him, something you and I have seen in practice mm-hmm. and in training camp and at the scrimmage and so forth. So, definite step forward for Blaine Gabbert.
All right, question two, a familiar one. When's Maurice going to get into camp?
And this seems to be the question that people continue to ask, expecting that we'll suddenly have an answer.
Right.
But I don't think, you know, none of us know. And oh, again, it's, I think this is the question, is that it's up to Maurice to get in here when he wants to get in here.
Right.
The question is, at what point does Maurice recognize that it's just up to him because nothing else is going to happen? And maybe he already does, and he has already got a plan for this.
When he wants to. Mm-hmm. I mean, and, you know, in the Ozone for the last, obviously, 3 months, people have been asking this question in a million different ways. And it's really up to Maurice Jones-Drew. And I think fans around here are grasping that this is not something that the Jaguars consider this problem that they have to solve, this thing that they've got to call Maurice and get him on the phone and say, hey, let's figure this out. That's not the approach. This is not a puzzle or a dilemma. This is, we'll see you when you get here.
And I'll tell you this, that having, for whatever reason, the months of August and October both seem to be big months for people asking for me to come out and speak to civic groups and charity, you know, host charity events, things like this. And I've spoken to a number of groups recently. It was at the Mennonac Club yesterday, and Rotary Club the day before. And the public sentiment is not on Maurice's side here.
Not at all.
And it's slipping away the longer it goes that way.
Right. And again,
I'm not sure if he cares about that or not, but it is something I've noted.
That usually changes, you know, sort of like last year when everybody said, I'm never watching football again. And then as soon as the lockout ended,
yeah,
they'd love to have your arms around him again. They'll embrace Maurice when he comes back, but you're right. There is not a whole lot of sentiment or a whole lot of people siding with Maurice. You know, but again, that's not really the issue. The issue is when Maurice decides to get in here, he's going to get in here, and that's when it's going to end.
All right,
final question. You think this question would have just a simple answer, but I think you guys are probably going to put a twist on this. Where's Justin Blackmon fit in the wide receiver core?
Well, I mean, the short answer is he's the starter opposite LaRon Robinson. And, you know, we'll have plenty of time to talk about Justin throughout the show. But if anything, he has looked better early than I thought he would, considering the time he's missed. And the thing that really stands out to you when you talk to defensive players about Justin is, I don't know how you define it, but he has special hands. And when the ball hits his hands, it even sounds different in a weird way. And I couldn't really even put that into words, but you watch him catch, and it's like Rasheen Mathis said a couple of times, you can tell this guy is unaccustomed to the ball going off of his hands. And even great wide receivers that I've covered, you know, Marvin Harris and Reggie Wayne, there's something about Justin's hands that make you think he's not going to have very many drops.
And Mercedes Lewis said today that it's very obvious.
Jimmy Smith in that
category,
too.
Right. Very obvious from his standpoint that not only the hands, but that he naturally goes and gets the ball. And, you don't, again, every wide receiver in the history of the NFL has been coached, come back to the ball. You know, meet the ball halfway. Don't wait for the ball to get to you.
You don't have to tell this guy to do that.
You don't have to tell him. He does it.
And I don't get too excited about him because I'm skeptical about rookie wide receivers having huge impacts, and he may prove me wrong, but there are things about this guy that are very interesting. And again, I've covered Jimmy Smith, Marvin Harris, and Reggie Wayne, who I consider all those, you know, some of the top guys in the league in the last 15 years. This guy's interesting because he's not like those guys, but he has some qualities that are just different. And it's exciting to watch.
If he had 48 catches, 756 yards, and 4 touchdowns, would you consider that a successful rookie year?
I would.
Okay. I'm not sure what the fan base expectation.
Right. I'm not either.
But those are the rookie year numbers for Calvin Johnson.
Yeah.
Who's the best wide receiver in football right
sure.
now.
Sure. And those are the rookie, you know, again, I go back to, you know, Jimmy Smith obviously was a different, you know, cat because it was – he came in slowly, had all his problems at the beginning of his career. You know, I covered Reggie Wayne in 2001, who, you know, I think you can make the argument that if Justin Blackmon's career matched Reggie Wayne's, I don't think anybody would be disappointed.
No, absolutely not.
You know, he started slow. Receivers start slow. But, again, there's something about watching this guy in practice that I'm sort of starting to believe that he may not start slow.
Let me bring up one other name, though, in the same conversation. Andre Johnson, 66 catches, 976 yards, and 4 touchdowns. Very good numbers.
Yeah, right? You get that as a rookie.
That would be a great year.
It's almost a guarantee that you're going to be elite.
Yeah. All right, those are the three burning questions. Straight ahead, we'll hear from the general manager, Gene Smith, what you don't know about Friday night's Jaguars victory over the Giants. And we'll take your calls and questions. You can join us via the phones at 355-NFL1, 1-800-355-6351, or tweet either John or myself or both at Cole Pepper or at John Osher. And when we come back as well, going to tell you about an opportunity for you to win sideline passes and how to get on screen with the Jaguars. You can also leave your comments, facebook.com/Jacksonville Jaguars. Just look for the Jaguars Reporters thread that started right at the top. Back after this timeout on Jaguars Reporters here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back, Jaguars Reporters, here on a Tuesday night. Cole Pepper, John Osher, Joe Fortunato at the controls. Fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today. Quick note for you, particularly if you are very video-oriented, chance for you to see your 30-second all-in commercial, homemade version, shown on the screen here at the stadium, and get sideline passes in the process. Go to Facebook.com/Jacksonville Jaguars. Upload your Facebook video for a chance to win your all-in video. We've seen the coach, we've seen the owner, we've seen the players involved in an all-in commercial. So go shoot your 30-second all-in commercial, and you could be an all-in fan. Jaguars season tickets, group tickets, 5-game packs, and single-game seats are on sale right now. Go all-in by calling 633-2000 or visit Jaguars.com. Welcome back, Jaguars Reporters, here on a Tuesday night. Jaguars will take on the Saints on Friday in New Orleans. We'll talk more about that game here in just a bit. But for now, we look back for a moment on the Jaguars' victory over the Giants with the general manager, Gene Smith. What did you not know from that game?
Really, how well we controlled the ball throughout the game. I thought, certainly the first drive, 13 plays, 89 yards, was a good way to come out and start the football game. But throughout the course of the game, when you convert to 53% on third down, 20 first downs and 34-minute time of possession, I think that'll bode well for us to be able to execute at that level to control the ball like that.
All right, there's the general manager, Gene Smith. That is something I didn't really take note of at all, but looking back on it, he's absolutely right. They did convert an awful lot of third downs and certainly controlled the ball and controlled the tempo of the game for the most part.
Yeah, and I'm not always a believer that, not playing well after your starters go down automatically means that your depth isn't as good as the other teams. I know sometimes in the preseason, coaches are trying different things. You're trying different combinations. Sometimes, one offensive lineman struggling or one area of a defense struggling can make it look like your entire unit on that side is bad. But if you watch that game throughout, there wasn't really a time where you thought, boy, the Giants are just better than the Jaguars on this field. They got behind a little bit in the first half, fell behind 24-7, but that was really the result of two straight turnovers that sort of let the game get out of hand. But after that, the playing field sort of leveled, and it's interesting because I've believed that this is going to be a deep team, and we may have seen some of that Friday.
Yeah, and the Jaguars have, by the way, been a pretty good second half team in the preseason the last couple of years because of some of that depth that's been building. Now, of course, time to translate it to being good first and second half regular season numbers. 355-NFL1, 1-800-355-6351. Let's get some comments from the Twitterverse and from Facebook. In fact, let's go to a Get Social with Copy Facts. Joe Fortunato has a question from Facebook.
Yeah, this is from Michael. Guys, from what you've seen from Justin Blackmon, is he doing what he was portrayed in college as, a physical wide receiver, elite leaping ability, route running, and hands?
Well, route running actually wasn't what was considered a big strength in college for Justin. That's something that he's talked about pretty openly since he got here, that he knows he needs to work on. Jerry Sullivan knows he needs to work on it. but hands, you know, yes, absolutely, they've looked good. I think we can assume that he's going to play physical. I don't know how much we've been able to see of that yet because it's been in practice. But he is – there was one play the other day in red zone. He had two, you know, fairly spectacular touchdown catches, one of which he came over Dwight Lowry and made a really clean leaping catch that everybody was talking about afterward. There was another one in the corner of the end zone where I forget who was covering him, but Blaine was under some pressure, and he made a nice pass out to the left, and Justin shielded the defender with his body and, you know, just kind of stuck his hands out and, you know, snatched the ball the way you're supposed to. But it was an example of how he uses his body to make sure he's open. And you would think that's only going to improve as he plays, and you're only going to see more of that.
I haven't really seen it specifically since he got back into camp, but during the time he was on the field of the OTAs, one of the things that struck me about Blackman was his flexibility and the ability to turn his torso back to the quarterback while still running downfield, basically at full speed. Mm-hmm. Some guys really slow down when they start turning back to look at the quarterback or turn back to find the ball. He doesn't. I mean, he can go just about full speed, and I think that's an impressive part of what he's doing. To Twitter for some more questions. One I liked here from one listener said, please tell me Heath Evans is checking in. No, we've still not been able to track down
Heath who?
Heath Evans. Here's one. Do you risk playing Jennings on Rashad Jennings on kick returns, given injuries and MJD going to likely be splitting time upon reporting? Let's start with a point that I'm not sure that how much time will be split once Maurice Drew gets back into camp and gets into speed. Maybe in the short term you might see some of that as he proves that he's ready to go. What do you think about using Rashad Jennings on kick returns?
Now, absolutely not. I mean, and John Bonamago talked about that last week, that, yeah, he'd love to have Rashad on kick returns. He's probably the best guy because of his speed and size, but he's not a guy that is going to be used there until Maurice gets back. But I sort of disagree with you. I think Rashad's going to cut into Maurice's carries. Not, you know, it's going to be half and half, certainly, but he's going to play. He's going to play once Maurice gets back.
But don't you think that
back.
Was going to be part of the thing as long as he was healthy? Or do you think he's earned more based on of what he's done as much as what Maurice not being here?
Well, I think he's shown, you know, certainly he can handle it and he's ready. But I think no matter what had happened with Maurice this year, it was going to be more of a split backfield. And meaning more guys were going to kick carries, more guys were going to be involved. I don't think you'll see it nearly as all run oriented all the time anyway. So it'll be fewer carries for Maurice Jones-Drew, especially if Rashad continues to play the way he has.
800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. Let's get one more in from Facebook, Joe.
Who's the producer? This one all over the place. I asked multiple times, should the Jaguars be looking at Jeff Demps?
All right, very fast. Obviously, one of the bits of stories today is that Jeff Demps, who won a silver medal in the 4x1 or 4x2 team running in one of the preliminaries, is now saying he's going to play football. Saying so long to track, he's going to play football. I think it makes some sense. The one thing that's a holdback is he's not a punt returner. He's just a kick returner.
Right, and a distinct difference between those two.
And it's easier to find kick returns than punt returners. But to bring a guy in with that kind of speed, that kind of play game-breaking speed, mm-hmm. I'd be interested in looking at it.
Yeah, I got an email today from somebody saying, why wouldn't you take a look at Demps and Burris? And, it's two completely different scenarios. Burris is a guy, exactly what he is. He's a guy at the end of his career.
Plaxico Burris.
Right. Yeah. Demps makes much more sense because he's a young guy. He does appear to have upside. You need a returner. So, the Jaguars historically have not looked at the veteran, aging guy who's, the quote-unquote baggage wide receiver. But Demps is a different case than that because he's younger. And the speed, obviously.
Yeah, and really, that wouldn't really be as a wide receiver. You'd be bringing him in to be a
absolutely,
return guy.
Right.
And that's what they'd be looking for. All right, we'll take time out. When we come back, we'll hear from the head coach, Mike Mularkey, what he said today in the was it, next to last two-a-day in training camp? Is that right?
Yes, it is.
All right, tomorrow, final two-a-day. Osha is all fired up.
I was fired up about that.
Plus a hole in the ozone, a question from one of the folks who emailed in to John. We'll find out how could it possibly have not made it into the ozone, but which makes it right here on Jaguars Reporters. More of your calls as well when we come back. Visit Sonny's today. Try the new barbecue baskets, the slow-smoked, pulled, and sliced meat basket, $7.99. Or for just a little more, choose between two other mouth-watering baskets. Sonny's, the first name in barbecue. Injury report as well right around the corner. This is Jaguars Reporters right here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back, Jaguars Reporters, here on a Tuesday night. Cole Temper, John Osher. Injury update brought to you by Baptist Health. Depend on us for life. A couple of guys coming out of the game on Friday. Derek Cox with a strained calf. John Estes with a sprained knee. Estes appears to be the more serious of the two. And then Eben Britton today at one point in practice. I thought we were going to have to put Eben Britton on a slab. He looked so bad as he was walking. I'm like, oh, boy, this is back injury creeping up again. Is this trouble? Turned out, no, not the back. He was just gassed. He'd given all he had, and he couldn't give any more. Dehydrated, took IVs, cramping, the whole thing. That looked like a guy about going to die the way he was walking across the practice field, though. I was worried for a bit.
Yeah, he was completely cramped up, and I talked to him in the locker room, and he goes, dude, I just redline it. Which is great. I mean,
by the way, Eben is one of the great personalities on this team.
Yeah, he really is.
Because he's got a lot of right brain in him, you know, very creative, likes to do creative writing, of course, has a lot of teachers and performers in his family lineage, and kind of an alternative thinker. He kind of comes up with different angles on things naturally, and then he goes out there and roughs people up for a living.
Well, and he also gets it. The neatest thing to see this training camp, you know, to anybody who's followed this team and gotten to know Eben a little bit, is to see him out there enjoying playing football. And, you know, he clearly loves being back out there. And, you know, good for him.
All right, time now for Mike Mularkey said it. This is the head coach after the morning session today.
That 9-on-7 was by far the best. That is where we got to be up front with both sides of the ball. We got to be physical. That was by far the best period we've had of the whole camp.
All right, that's interesting. I thought that you said that the third week of camp is difficult. It's physical. You've played a game. You've been in camp for a long time. It's hot. You're working two-a-days, many days. But then a 9-on-7 drill was the best drill they've had in camp all year. What does that tell you?
Well, it was clear. If you were watching it, I happened to be down there when they were doing it. And the enthusiasm on both sides of the ball, the intensity, they would run a running play to the left side, break for 10 or 15 yards, and the energy that the offensive line had and the offensive players in the sidelines, it was different than anything I've ever seen in a football practice in the NFL in terms of, you know, just the intensity level and the energy that both sides were giving. You can tell, I really thought watching that drill and a lot of practice today, frankly, that this is a team coming together, starting to figure out what it is, and through confidence sometimes comes having fun. And this was a team out there today that was having fun playing football, because I think they're optimistic about things. Even though it's tough and hot, it's fun to be part of something that you feel like is starting to come together, and that's the vibe you got.
All right, how much do you think, though, of that came from the fact that they won the game? In other words, playing what if? If Matt Veldman had not caught the Jordan Palmer pass in the back of the end zone for the two-point try, and they had lost 31-30, how much different would the vibe have been this week?
I think it came far less from that than especially the frontline offensive players seeing that what they were trying to do was working. And I think that gives you some hope. You can talk all offseason, you can talk in OTAs about, yeah, we're going to be better. But to come out and see Blaine throwing, you know, converting third and, you know, third and longs, the receivers on Friday had a lot of what they were doing the first couple of weeks and what they've been being told by Jerry Sullivan validated. And that, they already know the defense is good. They know and believe they've got talent. Now to see it happen, you can follow what you did, if you will. Okay, we did that. Let's keep doing that. Let's buy in. Let's get better. And it seems like you've seen that this week.
All right, every week we take a question that has come into the Ozone that did not make it on Jaguars.com, but that we think is a question that needs to be addressed. So, without further ado, we enter a hole in the Ozone, and here's the question from Rob in Section 205. Wait, is he there now? Can we call security? Get Rob out of Section 205. No, okay. I'm still a bit puzzled by the Britton move. Why isn't Bradfield moving to guard and leaving Britton in his natural position? And I have to admit, John, I was concerned about moving Britton, particularly with his back, to guard, where the back is under a little more, not the offensive line at all is easy on the back, but guard is tougher than tackle typically.
Yeah, and if you haven't been following this story, what people are having trouble getting through their head is this is not a move about Britton. This is a move. Once Cameron Bradfield got pads on last week, these coaches started seeing what the personnel people had seen last year, which is that Cameron Bradfield might be a long-term answer, meaning a long-term guy who can start for a lot of teams at right tackle. He might be really, really good, and they want to give him a chance to show that he can be that.
Now, he got a tough baptism there against mm-hmm. Justin Tuck right out of the gate.
On the first play, but after that, he played better.
I was going to say, after that, settled down.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Here's Evan Britton, former second-round pick,
mm-hmm.
a guy who, when they drafted him, they thought, hey, he's going to be one of the bookends, along with Eugene
sure.
Monroe, who's Monroe's looked terrific, by the way. Injuries have certainly been a big part of this.
Right.
He's a very physical offensive lineman, and that's part of his game would suit playing guard, but not necessarily, he's not really built like a guard traditionally. Usually guards a little more low to the ground. But Malarkey has said several times, hey, they want to get the best five out there.
Right.
So they got a lot of guys working in a lot of different positions right now.
And realistically, with the offensive line, you're going to need guys. And if – I don't know what will happen when Will Rackley comes back. I don't know who starts there. But if Evan Britton – say in theory he doesn't start the season, it would still be surprising if he didn't play 5, 6, 7 games because guys get hurt.
Yep.
And you really need 6 or 7 guys. And I have no idea if it, again, that's not saying he won't start. But – your sixth guy on the offensive line, if you've got a guy who can play guard, tackle, center, that guy's almost a starter.
And by the way, a month ago, Cameron Bradfield was not on anybody's radar as being a starter at right tackle.
No.
It was.
But you've got
Britton,
a new coaching
Wimper,
staff.
Yep.
They remember, they didn't see, they saw these guys on tape, and there wasn't a whole lot of tape of Cameron Bradfield last year. He played in a couple of games. So they saw OTAs, and you can see a guy's athleticism. But he's a guy that once the pads came on last week or the week before, all of a sudden these coaches started looking at it and saying, let's find out if he's as good as he looks.
When we come back, we're going to talk about what Mike Malarkey is doing to touchdown celebrations, plus what we'll be asking this week in the locker room. We'll take your calls, 800-355-NFL1. You can hit us up on Twitter, at Cole Pepper, at John Osher, or on Facebook, facebook.com/Jacksonville Jaguars. You need a truck that works for you even when you're not working. The 2012 Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup truck that fits your lifestyle. See your Southern Chevy dealer today, proud sponsors of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Back with more after this timeout on Jaguars Reporters right here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back, Jaguars Reporters, presented by Burger King here on Jaguars Radio. Jaguars getting set to take on the Saints' second preseason game Friday in New Orleans. Joe and John in the Big Easy batting down the hatches.
Bourbon Street, baby.
I was just there for the Final Four. I've got a couple places for you guys to check out. Just off bourbons, not, for a slightly more mature.
Just remember, I don't have that
audience.
Cole Pepper money, okay?
We're going to find Joe under a Buick on Friday morning.
With FEMA painted across the side of him.
I got no problem with Buicks. I like Buicks.
All right. We continue on here. 5 o'clock, by the way. We'll take the air as we bring you the Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue tailgate show and the kickoff at 8 o'clock. Mike Mularkey, a word that I heard today regarding Mike Mularkey, which I keep hearing these different descriptors of him that you wouldn't necessarily expect to hear associated with football coaches. Sensible.
Mm-hmm.
He's a sensible guy. And he's sensible. So he has told his team that no spiking the ball, no, touchdown dances and choreographed things. When you score a touchdown, go over and hand the ball to the ref, and when you do, he's going to make a $250 donation to Wolf or to
Ronald McDonald House,
and the Jaguars Foundation will match it.
Yeah, and as an aside to that, I mean, obviously, you can't say enough about what a great idea it is. It's pitch perfect with what he's been about since he got here. For Jaguars fans who are convinced that the national media is quote-unquote out to get them, I happened to look on Pro Football Talk a couple of minutes ago, and that was the lead story for a time. And Mike Florio, who some people love and some people hate, called it brilliant. So for those who care about that, there's some positive national pub coming from it too. And there are those Jaguars fans who that's very important to. But, and it just kind of goes back to he's made all the right moves on that front. And there's no question that locker room is all about supporting him right now. Now what that means on the field, who knows, but it can't be a negative.
Yeah, he's again, I've just been so impressed with the way that he has set the tone and the environment with what's happened. Here's a email, or rather a Twitter question. Jeff Demp, speed in a straight line, return is a bit different, don't you think?
Not kickoff.
And I would also say
as much.
This is not just a sprinter and this is not Usain Bolt, who's never played football, coming
right
in. Here's a guy who played football in the SEC at a high level.
Right.
Was an impact player, a 10 or 12 touch a game guy. He wasn't a 30 carry a game guy. He used a little bit out of the backfield, a little bit as a wide receiver, a little bit as a return man. But again, he would be the fastest player, if he were to come here, he'd be the fastest player the Jaguars ever had.
Well, and you obviously just can't grab the ball and run in a straight line down a one lane track, but if there is a spot where straight ahead speed can really matter, it is kickoff return. Mm-hmm. And you've got to make maybe one move and one cut through a wedge and then go. Now, again, the question is, how much does that position really matter in the NFL these days? That's a different question.
Yep.
But if you're going to use them,
that would be it.
You can certainly get a few yards out of that speed.
I remember Tamarick Vanover from Florida State, who played in Kansas City. The brakes and the steering wasn't so good, but boy, the accelerator worked. And he was a terrific kick return guy for quite a few years. Okay, let's get another one from Facebook here before we tell you what we'll be asking this week.
All right, guys, this is from John. Is the backup quarterback position up for grabs between Henny and Palmer?
I think we'll know a lot more on Friday. Jordan clearly played very well the other night. I'm sort of in the minority. I've thought in the last week or so that Chad Henney's played a little better than he did at first. So I hesitate to say it off one preseason game that it's up for grabs, but certainly Jordan Palmer is making a push, and if things go the same way on Friday, this is not a staff that is worried about how much a guy signed for. This is a new staff that's putting together a new team, so more positions are, quote-unquote, up for grabs than you might have thought.
All right, time now as we wrap it up with what we'll be asking, since we are reporters.
When is lunch?
More or less. Always the first question, and this week, by the way, the answer has been 12:30.
That's right.
When is the frozen yogurt machine coming back in the lunchroom? Another important question. Thank you, Joe. Now, what we'll be asking this week as we get ready for the Jaguars and the Saints in the second preseason game?
Well, the first issue is always playing time in the preseason. And Mike Mularkey said today that the starters, interestingly enough, will probably play through the first half, which is a little longer than a lot of preseason games. Justin Blackman, the idea is also to play him through the first half if he shows he's conditioned and if he has the wind to protect himself and to make plays. So that's interesting that you get a chance to see him for a half on Friday.
And I'll be asking what the offensive line really looks like right now, not only in terms of how they play, but more to the point, who fits in where? Mm-hmm. Who really is projected as the starter for this or for that? All right.
When is lunch?
12:30. still 12. I think it's 12:30 all month. 12:30. Yogurt machine's a whole other story.
Where's the yogurt machine?
Get that frozen yogurt? All right, we will be on the air at 5 o'clock on Friday with the Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue Tailgate Show. Kickoff at 8 tomorrow night. Jaguars this week at 6 o'clock. Until then, Cole Pepper saying thanks for listening and good night from Jaguar Central.